Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. 400. That's how many made-for-TV movies Lifetime has presented over its nearly 40-year lifetime. Number 400 debuts tomorrow night. The Long Island Serial Killer, A Mother's Hunt for Justice. Award-winning executive producer Elizabeth Steven and director Stan Brooks join me next in an internet radio exclusive. Also ahead, Hulu goes forward with The Dropout despite the dropout of its main star, our classic trivia question, Goodbye, Mr. ITV, and Donald Glover's Amazon deal is our takeaway of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and Tuna Radio, presented on Verbal, iHeartRadio, and the Amazon Music Podcast Networks. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in this program. 32 degrees and flurries going on at the top of the hour here in the New York metro area, where we originate. And welcome once again on this Friday afternoon to the program about TV's current and future. Got a good one for you today. Wonderful guests coming your way from the other side of the USA. That's Los Angeles. And we invite you, as always, wherever you are, to be part of the program. So get interactive with us. Make a phone call at 646-652-2906. 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe. Here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. Shy about the phone? No problem. Use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find that at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Our guest from the Long Island Serial Killer, that's Lifetime's fourth made-for-TV movie tomorrow night, will join us from L.A. after these news notes. Hulu will go forward with The Dropout, a miniseries project first publicized 2 years ago, despite star and Saturday Night Live personality Kate McKinnon dropping out. From the get-go, Emmy winner McKinnon was on board to play Elizabeth Holmes, the founder of controversial biotech firm Theranos. McKinnon also was signed as executive producer and on track to start filming later this spring after wrapping her latest SNL season. At this hour, McKinnon has not offered any comment about her departure. She still has a deal to star in executive producer Joe Exotic's series, coming in simulcast form, NBC and USA Network next year. Hulu expects to announce a new star and filming plans in a few weeks. Now some quickies. Disney Channel's Secrets of Sulphur Springs, whose executive producer was on this program about a month ago, begins the second run via Disney Plus next Friday. The first 5 episodes will launch that run. Fox will bring Christmas Moody series The Moodies back for a new round of predicaments April 1st. Dennis Leary and Elizabeth Perkins co-star. Oops, there goes an Emmy change of heart. There will be two variety series categories this year, not one, as announced last season. Once again, 2 variety series, one for variety talk, one for sketch comedy, will be categories in this year's Emmy Awards, not one, as was announced last December. Breaking news in the last half hour, HBO Max will put together Subject to Change, a speculative drama series created by J.J. Abrams. And Power Rangers Die Hards, you've been served. Dino Fury, season 28, opens tomorrow at 8 a.m. Eastern and Pacific, on Nickelodeon. And that is news notes for today. A number of candidates were able to be picked or were in contention to be Lifetime's 400th made-for-TV movie. And as it turns out, that movie is going to be one of its ripped-from-the-headlines movies, its latest. It's called The Long Island Serial Killer, A Mother's Hunt for Justice. It premieres tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Pacific time, and it stars Kim Delaney of not only NYPD Blue fame, but Lifetime's one of its longest-running scripted series, Army Wives. Joining us live from Los Angeles are the two key people involved in the making of the program. First, Peabody Award-winning executive producer from the Showtime series Brotherhood, Elizabeth Steven. Elizabeth, thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. And also joining us from where you are in L.A., he won the Emmy Award for AMC's miniseries Broken Trail. You remember that Western program with Robert Duvall and Thomas Hayden Church? It was the first miniseries on cable, I believe, to win 4 Emmy nominations, and he won as producer for Outstanding Miniseries. The pleasure of this program, director Stan Brooks. Stan, happy to have you aboard.
My pleasure. Excited to be here.
Elizabeth, we'll start with you. How did this project come your way?
Well, interestingly enough, this project came my way through Stan and Sony, the distributor, and Lifetime, because this is actually a project that Stan developed with the writer John Pielmeyer, another big award-winning writer, for many years. And so, Stan, I think you should actually answer the question about the real origination of it.
Thank you, Elizabeth. So John Pielmeyer and I had done a lot of really great work together. We adapted Patricia Cornwell's movies. We adapted an Anne Rule book together. We had done a lot of really great work. And we were coming off of a very successful miniseries that John wrote and I produced, that John actually performed in, called The Capture of the Green River Killer for Lifetime. And the story came to me from Christine Pelisek, who was the L.A. Weekly writer who broke the Grim Sleeper serial killer story for L.A. Weekly and is now the lead crime reporter for People magazine. And she called me about 6 years ago and told me the story, and they were writing about it in People. And I read it and immediately knew it was a movie and went back to John, since we had had such success with Green River Killer, and because we like to approach these movies as about the victims more than about the killer. And so we take a different approach to serial killer movies. And so we got Lifetime on board, the problem being that there had been no arrests at that time. And so when we did our three drafts of the script, it kind of sat on the shelf because Lifetime was concerned that it didn't have an ending of any consequence. And then in the interim, somebody was arrested, and I think that helped us get green light. And then I think the Netflix movie probably drew attention to the story, put it on the front page again, and that got Lifetime excited about going forward with it. And about 6 months ago, we got greenlit.
Mm-hmm. And Elizabeth, something else that makes this movie special is that it also marks the behind-the-scenes scripted debut of Deborah Norville, the former Today Show anchor, NBC correspondent, Movie Scene of Sunrise, who, of course, now is the anchor of Inside Edition, seen weeknights or weekdays in syndication, depending on who you are. And I understand that she did cover this story when it broke about a decade ago. How did she get involved in doing this? And when she did, how did you two, Elizabeth, connect?
Well, first of all, I know Stan as well. We are so incredibly excited that Deborah came onto this project. She's been, I can't tell you what an amazing contribution she's made. She was brought into the project through Lifetime, I think she read a few scripts, and this one really appealed to her because she likes stories that are, as she says, about mothers on a mission. And she also, as you said, Simon, she had covered this story, so she had a built-in affinity for it. We were then introduced, you know, and this is during COVID, obviously, through Zoom. By the network, and we ended up working together on also with publicity at Lifetime, figuring out what kind of a angle could be used for telling this story. And one of the things that she came up with was, how do you make a movie during a pandemic? Which was really quite interesting. I mean, it was one of the reasons really why I came on board, just as another set of hands, because, you know, Stan is an incredible producer. But with, you know, having to direct this as well, and then there's all these COVID protocols, it was, I know, very helpful to have somebody else there. But one of the things that Deborah and I decided to do was actually do behind-the-scenes interviews with crew, with cast, with everybody who was involved in the show, on how their roles had changed in order to make this movie during a pandemic. And I don't know if you saw the Inside Edition piece that she did when she announced the movie, and I'm sure they'll run these again, but all the behind the scenes video that was shot for this movie was shot by me with my iPhone. So it was pretty amazing to be able to use that and get this footage out there, because otherwise we were really limited. You know, we were limited on the amount of people that we could have on set. There were a lot of restrictions in place because of COVID. So she worked very closely with us. She, you know, had input on the script. She had input on how we cast this, how we crewed up, And she's been really fantastic in, you know, helping get the word out.
We are speaking with the two key people behind Lifetime's 400th original made-for-TV movie, and that is The Long Island Serial Killer, A Mother's Hunt for Justice. Premieres tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Lifetime. We have executive producer Elizabeth Steven and director Stan Brooks. Both have won awards in their past. Elizabeth and Peabody, Stan and Emmy. And they're both with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Happy you're with us as well from wherever you are listening to us. And we invite you to be involved in the conversation. Just give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, is already in the room. Got a great hour in store for you on Monday from the award-winning and critically acclaimed NBC series Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. We got the person who plays Zoe's brother, co-star Andrew Lee. He was a recurring co-star in season one. Now in season two, he is a full-time co-star. We'll talk to him about all of that. And I'll tell you, Zoe is getting better and better as the second season rolls on NBC. Andrew Lee from Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist will be our lead guest. Then he'll be one of the top broadcast station owners in the Midwest. His company is Circle City Broadcasting. His name is DeJean McCoy. And now he's working on the first ever multicultural news network, which he hopes to get on the air this fall. DeJean McCoy from Circle City Broadcasting, Andrew Lee from Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, both with us live and exclusive, Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Stan, one of the other issues that you had, because I believe there was no filming of, that could be done in New York State, Long Island included, that you could not film in Long Island. So how did you deal with that obstacle that was in your past?
Well, that was a... That was probably the biggest hurdle that we dealt with in pre-production was we were in Vancouver. That was a Sony decision as to where we were going to shoot. And I had to find a way to make Vancouver look like Long Island. And we used a lot of research photos. I had an extraordinary location manager who went all over the coast, and we found one amazing beach out of all the coastline in Vancouver that looked like the area where the bodies had been found in Gilgo Beach and Manorville. And I was very fortunate to have a great crew, an incredible art department. And then we used a little bit of visual effects to tie in the neighborhood where Mary Gilbert went to look for her daughter, Shannon. And we made it work. It was a lot of pre-planning, a lot of storyboarding, but we were able to duplicate, you know, anytime the sun was going down, we played it as a sunrise on the East Coast, and so we were able to make it work.
Can I just add to that? One of the things that's really fun about the film, even though it's not, you know, necessarily a fun film, but it's certainly entertaining, is watching it and actually trying to figure out what was real and what is a visual effect, because it came out, it's so seamless, and you know, I've seen it, I don't know, hundreds of times now, obviously, but it still really catches my breath when I see some of these shots and you really think that you are in Long Island. So it's just one of the interesting things about watching this movie.
I was thinking, Stan, watching the clips today, you saw in like the marshlands and the parkland. It sounds like a lot of this film was shot outdoors. You see the outdoor. You see like shopping centers, the police station. Some of the scenes are key that start outdoors and go indoors. It's very, very Long Island. You really cannot tell the difference. Vancouver is one of those cities where you can get away with having it be Long Island.
For us, it was key having certain signature elements of the beaches in Long Island and the topography. And then also when we went into the towns to make sure that it looked like, you know, there are obviously no skyscrapers. Everything's kind of sitting right close to the street. And I've spent a fair time in Long Island and Atlantic City and the Jersey Shore. And so I knew what we were looking for. And then we used all kinds of research photos to try and duplicate what we had. And you're right. It was a pretty good canvas for trying to replicate the Gilgo Beach and Oak Beach and Manorville locations where the real story took place.
Elizabeth, talk about Kim Delaney and what she did. I mean, she went above and beyond to portray this mother, especially given the fact that she could not do any research with the mother herself because, spoiler alert, the mother died And apparently she died not because of her search, but because of circumstances in her family that are still very unclear.
Yes, very tragic. Kim Delaney, however, is not tragic. She is amazing. Stan and I were both so excited when she came on. And talk about commitment. You know, the first thing that she did was she said, I'm going to go blonde, which is a big commitment because she was doing this film in between General Hospital. So she left her character, Jackie Templeton, at General Hospital as a brunette. She came to work with us for, you know, 4 weeks. She was a blonde, and then she had to go back to being a brunette. So I just want to do a very quick shout-out to Amber George in Vancouver at Verve Salon, because to go from a brunette to a platinum blonde is not easy. And, you know, you saw the film, Simon. She looks – I mean, it's kind of shocking that it's Kim. I think for the first week it took all of us a little while to get used to the fact that we were talking to Kim Delaney, because we all know her as this beautiful brunette. But she was completely committed to this role. And I know one of the things she did during the 14 self-isolation that we all went through was she just steeped herself in research. And, you know, Stan, having spent 6 years on this project, had a trove of research material. And she just went down the rabbit hole, and she found out, you know, things about Mary that really weren't public knowledge. One of them was that she was kind of a closet smoker, and she brought that to the picture, and it really helped kind of, again, round this movie and really give it this authenticity that I think just adds so much more to it. So she was just absolutely incredible to have on this picture. I can't imagine anybody else doing this.
She read it's stuff I didn't even know existed.
Go ahead.
When we were during quarantine, when we were talking, she was reading stuff I didn't even know existed. There's a beautiful moment at the end of the show where mothers and sisters and daughters who lost family members among the 19 bodies that were found were being handed out a little token with a heart with angel wings on it. And she had found that this one of the moms who had become very close to her had handed all of the other moms this beautiful little, like an ornament. And so we put it in the movie. So the movie ends with that little token in everybody's hand. And I wouldn't have had that had it not been for Kim's research.
I was gonna raise the subject, but since you've raised it, Stan, I'll raise it now. Was there a lot of discussion about, because of the nature of this case, how to end the film?
Oh, endless. We went back and forth about where to end it, how to end it. You know, John Pielmeyer, who's the Pulitzer and Tony nominated playwright of Agnes of God, we in all of the things we work on together, we look for that place where we kind of wrestle with the idea of where is God and how does God exist in a world with this kind of evil if you're doing a serial killer movie. And so we knew we wanted to take it all the way through her victory and the mothers finding out, you know, what had happened to their children and the arrest of many of the corrupt officials in Suffolk County who had kind of pushed aside these victims because they had been sex workers and had not given them their due. And many of them had been reported missing 10 years prior to their bodies being found, and their bodies never would have been found had it not been for Mary Gilbert's search for Shannon. And so we had to take her all the way through that victory, the arrest of the officers and the corrupt officials, and then also have given her some time to I think have some distance and have some closure on the death and murder of her daughter.
But I also understand, Elizabeth, that when the cameras, because Kim did an interview with one of my colleagues at Media Bill, Steve Gidrow, and we'll talk about, by the way, you and I having a chance are you out there to catch that interview, because it is now published in a column, along with another column too, about the movie. That when the camera stopped rolling, Kim was still in character. She was so dedicated to the part that she would stay in character even when the cameras were not rolling.
That's true, and not to take anything away from Kim's process, but when you're making a movie like this, Teen Days, the camera is not off that long. And again, not to take anything away from Kim's process, because she was really, really remarkable. And again, when you're shooting something so fast, especially something that is so emotional, and you know, you're getting this very raw performance from her, you know, it really is extraordinary. And she did. She stayed in character. But at the same time, I have to say, there was nothing aloof about her. Everyone in the cast and the crew absolutely loved her. She's so personable and so warm. And, you know, she also brought that to this character. I mean, Kim is also a mama. And I think that was a really important and beautiful thing that she brought to her interpretation of Mary.
The Long Island Serial Killer, A Mother's Hunt for Justice, starring Kim Delaney in that mother role. It premieres tomorrow night on Lifetime, their latest Rip for the Headlines movie and number 400 of their series. And we have the executive producer and director, Elizabeth Steven, and Stan Brooks, both award winners for various projects. They're with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Tommy, I'm with you live from New York. If you have a question for our guests in our remaining moments with them, give them a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. And coming up on March 1st, we have a former Lifetime executive. His name is Gary Morgenstern. He used to do PR there. And lately, he's been a playwright. He's done some other interesting things in the world of writing for Broadway and other places. And now he's put together a television series. And believe it or not, he's going to release that television series next month in a very unusual way. He'll be here a week from Monday to talk about, along with the director of that project. It's very, very interesting, and it could be a groundbreaker for new television series. Gary Morgenstern, from formerly of Lifetime, and his director on his TV project, will join us live exclusively a week from Monday, 3:30 Eastern Pacific. That's how we'll start March, right here, March 1st, on Tomorrow Be Televised. Stan, when you're doing a Rip from the Headlines project, movie or miniseries, and in the serial killer vein, are there certain things you do or you emphasize in your directing, your approach to the project, that you would not do in other genres?
No question. I think it's you have to, with whoever is playing the lead, I think you have to get them seeped in the character. I think you want to apply them as much research material, video, newspaper articles, magazine articles, interviews, documentaries as you can. And then you have to get them at a certain point to step away and say, okay, now how are you going to play this character? Because it's not a documentary. It's how can you find that place in yourself to reach, you know, something that has sympathy and empathy for the character you're playing. But I would say the thing that is overwhelming to me in making these movies, and this is, I've done a troika of serial killer movies for Lifetime, my first being Green River Killer, my last one being The Grim Sleeper, and then this one, I think the thing that I'm always keenly aware of, and it feels more like a burden, is that we honor the dead, and that we never trivialize their death, and we never make what has happened into, you know, a sensational element, that we find the human element and the humanity in these poor young women. In all three cases, they were young women who were murdered and taken, you know, far too soon. And in all three situations, they were sex workers who were not reported immediately, and the photos didn't necessarily match them. And so the police would not pay any attention to them. And, you know, had it been, you know, Natalie Holloway, you'd know that weekend. And yet these women frequently wouldn't get any press, and then the police would frequently put them on the back burner of these cases. And so I think the paramount thing for me is honoring these young women and not making them, you know, a plot device or sensationalizing their deaths.
Elizabeth, what do you hope people watching tomorrow night will take away from their viewing experience?
You know, it's a really interesting question, and one of the things that that I've been hearing Deborah talk about, and I just love this, is the idea that we all have power, and that's something that's really exemplified by Mary. I mean, she's somebody who was just an ordinary mother, if you will, and she didn't have an easy life, and when she, you know, discovered that her daughter was missing and that no one was really doing anything about it, she stepped up and she was relentless in that pursuit. And she inspired a lot of other people. And so I think especially today in this climate when the powers around us feel so big and they loom so large and they can make you feel very, very small, to see a film like this, which is, about a real person and what she went through, I think it's really inspiring. And my hope is that, you know, people will watch this, men and women, frankly, and see that we all actually can make a difference. We really, really can.
Mm-hmm. By the way, are there any plans for Inside Edition to do for Norville to do a follow-up on Inside Edition about the case? Or some sort of, you know, if you know anything about this case, the police don't want the information, call Crime Stoppers, call the Long Island Police Department, anything like that?
Well, if they're not, I think we're going to be telling Deborah that right now, although she's probably listening. But she's been covering this for a number of years. And so she actually just did a little piece about the movie, but she also married it with footage of the real story and the media and news coverage of that story, which she has on the website there on Inside Edition. And it's really fantastic because, you can really see, the real story and how it was unfolding. And hopefully, and I can't imagine they wouldn't do a follow-up.
They're doing a
and we'll
doing
be
a piece
watching
today
what happens a little bit, and if there's anything pops up, we will do an up. We call them up as an update. We'll do something on the follow-up.
Thanks to Deborah's hard work, they are doing a story today on today's Inside Edition, and we, thanks to Deborah and Lifetime, we've partnered with Name Us, which is a organization for families to contact if for missing and exploited children, and their contact information will be on a card at the very end of the movie, NAMUS, for families that have lost children or exploited children.
And I'll tell you what we'll do, Stan and Elizabeth. We will we'll remark about that. I will watch the film on tomorrow night, and I'll make sure we can see that card, and we will put that posting down on our program on Monday, so people can
that's great.
Can, check it out if they need to.
That's
so we'll
great,
do that.
Son.
That's
Thank
they have
you.
Our commitment on that. You're very
great.
Very welcome, Stan. Before we go, what's next for you in terms of TV work?
Is that for me or Elizabeth?
That was
for
you, Stan.
Of course, Stan.
I have a couple of movies in development at a couple of networks, and I'm also pursuing my directing career. And it appears actually my next job will be a movie I wrote that I'll be producing down in Puerto Rico in July, another true story.
Elizabeth, how about you?
I have a couple of logs in the fire, if you will. I've been developing a lot of series since Brotherhood, and so I've got a couple of those that I've been working on. So we'll see. I'm hoping that I'm going to be working with Stan again because it was so fantastic.
Let me echo that. I think we both want to work together and with Kim. We had such an extraordinary experience, the three of us together.
And I have to say, I've been a Kim Delaney fan for years. I first saw her in terms of primetime television on an episode of The Equalizer. Which, of course, just got the revival on CBS going, and so far so well. I have a chance to meet Edwin Woodward, as I've mentioned before in this program, to meet Edwin Woodward twice, to meet Jim McCann, the executive producer. I'm thrilled the show is back on CBS. So far so good, and we'll see what happens. But I've seen Kim on Army Wives, on NYPD Blue, with a warming performance there. So it's great to see her back on Lifetime, and a very good role for her.
Simon, I have you beat because I would run home during college and back to my dorm to watch all my children. So I've been a fan of Kim's going back to her teen years.
And let me just say, Simon, this was a long-running competition between me and Stan because I, too, was, although I was in high school, was a huge fan of Kim on All My Children. And when she came on, the two of us were really going at it about when we discovered her first. So sorry, Simon, you just stepped right into it.
No problem. I sit corrected. I said something. Absolutely. Lifetime's 400th original film is tomorrow night, The Long Island Serial Killer, A Mother's Hunt for Justice, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on Lifetime. Check your locals for where that service is available in the air on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, go to www.mylifetime.com. That's www.mylifetime.com. And if you want more details about the making of the program, check out MediaGoes.com for not one, but two columns by my colleague there, Steve Gidrow. One is an interview with Kim Delaney, and the other is an interview with Tanya Lopez, the head of Virgil Movies at Lifetime, about the 400 achievements. So that's all at MediaGoes.com, www.MediaGoes.com. You can read it right now. Elizabeth Steven, Stan Brooks, thank you both very, very much for being on. Congratulations on the movie. Good luck, and let's hope it makes a real difference tomorrow night.
Thank you so much. This was so fun, Simon.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you, Elizabeth and Stan. Take care. Have a super weekend.
You too.
You too.
Elizabeth Steven and Stan Brooks joining us live from Los Angeles. When we come back, our classic trivia question of the week. Donald Glover made a very unique deal, and a very interesting element of that deal is our takeaway of the week. And we'll introduce you to an interactive TV pioneer who passed away earlier this week. His name is Gus Hauser. And there's a lot of reasons why you should know about him, because he had a very big impact on what you watch and how this medium is, especially now that interactive TV is finally in the mainstream of television. All that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. We connect to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio, Spreaker, and TuneIn at TuneIn.com. All together, reaching over 55 million listeners around the world every month and growing. BTR is your home for Sisters in Music. Check it out tomorrow at this very hour, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. That's Sisters in Music. Music, talk, and a whole lot more. Sisters in Music, tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget, best BTR coming your way 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised, our Friday hour for you. Simon Alpine with you live from New York. Coming up shortly, our classic trivia question, our takeaway of the week, and a special tribute to an interactive TV pioneer, Gus Hauser. We'll get to that after we pause for some words from our fine sponsor, Audible.com. One of the most anticipated films of this year is Where the Crawdads Sing, based on the brilliant atmospheric novel by Delia Owens. Well, you don't have to wait till the film comes out to enjoy it. You can enjoy it with sound, thanks to a trial run with Audible.com. It's one of the best-selling audiobooks, by the way, on that service. And you know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, oh yes, inspiration too. Over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, Verbal, etc., etc. Don't forget, when you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, it's audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook, you get a one-month trial of the service, you get great customer service from audible.com, and also health and wellness information. And that's not all. If you're already an Amazon Prime member customer, you get two audiobooks for your trial, and one of them can be from the growing catalog of Audible Originals. It's original audio productions and podcasts, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, plus great one-woman and one-man shows. So how about making this day or this weekend a great opportunity for you or someone you love? Check out audibletrial.com/televised and hear how audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. It makes a great gift any time of the year. audibletrial.com/televised. Now it's time for our regular feature, the classic trivia question of the week. Last time we're going to offer this question on the air, so get your thinking caps on, because if you're first with the correct answer, we have two book prizes for you, both from guests previously on this program. From David Tice of Hub Entertainment Research, it's The Genius Box, How the Idiot Box Got Smart and is Changing the Television Business. And from our very good Elvis expert, Frank D'Onofrio, it's his new bestseller on Amazon, Elvis, King of Rock and Roll. Here's the question. Who played John Adams on the 1976 Emmy-winning PBS miniseries, The Adams Chronicles? Multi-Emmy-winning, by the way. Who played John Adams on the 1976 PBS Emmy-winning miniseries, The Adams Chronicles? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, when you email, enclose your name and your mailing address, so if you win, we get the prize out to you as soon as possible. If we don't have a winner by the end today, we'll post a question tomorrow and possibly Sunday at Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter, where we have nearly 750 followers, which they get special news notes from me about what's going on in the world of television and a whole lot more. So don't forget, at Twitter, it's at UBC Simon TWBT. At UBC Simon TWBT. At Facebook, it's Simon Applebaum, where we have over 1,000 followers doing their thing with me. So let's see if we get that winner today. By the way, that will be our second winner of 2021. So let's get it done. Play in. And, of course, all the very best. And if we have time, we'll repeat the question before we go. Now it's time for our regular Friday feature, the takeaway of the week, the development that you should take away from this week that will impact the TV you watch in the months to come. And our takeaway of the week deals with a very important deal that has not yet been formally announced, but it got a lot of attention 48 hours ago in the entertainment trade press, Hollywood Reporter, Variety, Deadline, Hollywood Daily, et cetera, et cetera. And it's this. It's a multi-million-dollar, multi-year deal with Donald Glover, the star and the overseer of the critically acclaimed and, yes, Peabody Award-winning and Emmy-winning television series Atlanta on FX, which, incidentally, next month will go into production on both its third and fourth seasons. Well, even though Donald had a major deal with FX, he decided to change home places, going from FX to Amazon. What we understand is a 7- or 8-figure deal. Now, listen to what this deal involves. First of all, he'll develop new series at Amazon. His brother, Steven, who also works on Atlanta, will also get an overall deal to produce original content for Amazon. One of his first projects under this deal is a program called Hive about a Beyoncé-like person. And incidentally, the producer he works with and writer, Francesca Sloan, is going to work with him on Hive, and she has a deal with Amazon to develop content. Incidentally, all this is separate from the deal announced last week where he and Phoebe Waller-Bridge, the Emmy winner for Fleabag, both in front and behind the camera, will be teaming up in both, again, in front and behind the camera, for the TV series version of the popular movie Mr. and Mrs. Smith. That's the movie with Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. Well, that, by the way, is separate from the deal that was reported on this week. But here's the most important aspect of the deal, and this is the takeaway, that reportedly, under this deal, Donald Glover is going to create his own content channel. It's similar to what some people do on YouTube. But in this case, it's for television. And we believe that Glover is the first person under these program development deals to get his own content channel. And the understanding, and it's understanding because it's happened to be confirmed by Amazon or by Glover, is that this channel would not only present his content, but he would create and curate other content from other producers or writers or series creators. And they would be part of this content channel. That's the big takeaway. It's ground shattering in terms of this kind of deal. Nobody has done this kind of deal. This is like a copy of a YouTube situation where this certain YouTube star or influencer or producer gets a content for all their own videos. But in this case, it's full-fledged programming, whether it's series and movies and specials and so forth. And it also makes you wonder, if Glover can get this deal, think of the possibilities. Would, let's, for example, down the road, Shonda Rhimes, if she wants to renegotiate her deal with Netflix, says, okay, I see what Donald Glover's doing. I want my own hub. My own hub of content. Shondaland, let's say, for example, on Netflix. Or let's say Greg Berlanti, who's got 20 shows going on at the same time for all sorts of places, that maybe he makes a deal with an HBO Max to say, I want my own Greg Berlanti Land hub. This is, and what is big about this is, again, it's not just content that Glover makes or Glover executive produces. It's content that he will have other producers, first-time producers, veterans, people of color, etc., making under his banner. This is a ground-shattering deal that will definitely, if this is in fact correct, will really impact what you watch on television and will dramatically expand the participation of people in the media. So keep your eye on this, folks. This is a major takeaway. Hopefully next week, Glover and or Amazon will come clean about this deal. But the way it was reported, especially at the Hollywood Reporter, and incidentally it was also covered, it was the first topic of TV's Top 5 that came out this morning, wonderful podcast that Leslie Gilbert does with Daniel Feinberg, the Hollywood Reporter chief TV critic. It sounds like this is a big deal. and a ground-shattering deal. And this could be the foundation of future deals along this line, where if you're going to make a program development deal with a Netflix, a Hulu, a studio, an HBO Max, a Peacock, a Discovery Plus and the Unscripted Fan, and maybe down the road a Viacom, CBS, Paramount Plus, this could be what makes or breaks certain services. The ability to have individual content stars with their own channels. So keep your eye on this, folks. This is one big takeaway. And like I said, hope that Donald Glover and Amazon will break the details down very, very soon. There's been a lot of iconic people that have so far passed away this year. Recently we had Larry King. This week, Rush Limbaugh, both of whom changed radio and television in all sorts of ways. However, somebody else passed away this week that is not well known to a lot of people. And you ought to know this person. His name is Gus Hauser. Because Gus Hauser was the person that first put interactive television on the map and more. Gus Hauser, or Gustav Hauser, who I happen to have known, died February 14th from dementia at the age of 91. From 1973 to 1983, he was the chairman and chief executive of Warner Cable Communications, at one point one of the top cable operators in this country. And in 1977, he decided to have Columbus, Ohio, become an experimental cable system, a cable system unlike any other before, a cable system that would have 30 channels of unique service, including the first example of pay-per-view and the first example of interactive television, where you would watch a program and you would respond to it with a press of a button on your remote control. Programs from talk shows, variety shows, a game show that lasted four episodes hosted by one of the Dean of Game Show hosts, Bill Cullen, who probably was the first cable game show host on cable. And at one point, a children's program called Pinwheel. Pinwheel later became the foundation of Nickelodeon, the all-children's channel, back in the late 1970s. And he also did a show called Sight and Sound that was the jump-off point for MTV a few years later. It was all part of Cube. And Cube became the talk of television. All sorts of stories from all around the country about what people were doing in Columbus, Ohio. And it was Cube that allowed Warner Cable Communications to get cable franchises in a number of major cities. And it reached the point where Cube was actually launched between 1977 and the early 1980s in Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Dallas, Houston, and St. Louis. And ultimately, those cities were interconnected into what was called the Cube Network, where for 2 hours a night, 5 days a week, cable subscribers in those cities could watch programming live and respond to it live, including a program called Soap Scoop, where soap opera stars like a Kim Delaney from All My Children, or people like that at the time, could come on the air and actually respond to viewer questions. They could do polling. It was an amazing, amazing situation. And it looked like, because I covered it, the project at the time, it could go national. Unfortunately, the technology cost a lot of money. And Gus Hauser, in 1983, left Warner Cable to be replaced by the former Secretary of Transportation under President Ronald Reagan, Drew Lewis. And one of the first things that Lewis did was get rid of the Cube Network and get rid of Cube. And by 1984, it was gone. But the impact of Cube was felt because in its lifetime of about 5-6 years, it showed that interactive television could work. That if the technology made it so, it would work. By the way, a lot of talent behind the scenes and on the air came out of Q. People like Robert Morton, who later became, by the way, was a friend of mine when we were both students at American University in the 1970s, and then later on became the executive producer of Late Night with David Letterman and Lopez Tonight, George Lopez's two-season show on TBS. And a man named Jim Jenkins, an artist who later created one of Nickelodeon's first original cartoons, Doug. And Steve Bornstein, who worked on Ohio State football games while at CUBE in Columbus, Ohio, and later became the president of ESPN and later the NFL Network. And a lot of other talents in front of and behind the cameras at CUBE who have gone on to great things in the TV industry. Later, after his time at Warner Cable, Gus Hauser formed Hauser Communications, which owned systems in Virginia and elsewhere around the country. He founded the Paley Center for Media, one of the great repositories of classic TV programming, and now a great discussion point for many of the issues facing the medium today and in the future. He was vice chairman from the start until just 3 years ago. He also was an honoree of the Cable Hall of Fame in 2003. An incredible career. And until dementia hit him, he was as active as anybody. I would see Gus Hauser at Paley Center events, and he was right there, inquisitive, wondering about the latest TV happenings from everybody he met. And while a lot of people in the TV industry will take notice of Gus Hauser's passing this year and have sorrow for that, the one thing they can be bright about is that Gus Hauser was able to be around, at least at the start, of this new era of interactive television. Because now that the technology has become consumer-friendly and affordable and available through smart TV sets and smart TV devices, where you have an incredible variety of channels to work with, the technology is upgradable electronically, artificial intelligence is now incorporated where you can use voice services like Google Assistant and Alexa and Siri, not with separate devices, but through the television set to do a lot of things. And we now have interactive fitness services. We've had interactive content at the national level with Netflix. We have virtual worlds like Rival Peak available on Portal TV, Facebook's own smart TV device, which, by the way, you can do video chat live, and even chat, which incorporates augmented reality animation. And that 5G and other technologies are going to be incorporated down the road to have a wider variety of interactive service, from education to healthcare to controlling everything in your home or apartment, from the front door to your lights and air conditioning, to lifestyle services, to shopping and banking, and a whole lot more. Gus Hauser set it all up because he took the gamble back in 1977 on CUBE. This industry owes Gus Hauser a tremendous, tremendous appreciation. And the thanks will come from all of us and all of you who will be so served by where interactive TV is going in these times ahead. This is truly the decade that interactive television is becoming mainstream in this land and in this world. And I'm sure Gus is monitoring it all from up above. Thank you, Gus. Thank you for taking the chance and for inventing the possibility that we can have an interactive future that empowers everybody. And trust me, and trust Gus Hauser's memory, it will. We'll be back on Monday. We got a great hour in store for you. From Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist on NBC, we'll have the co-star, Andrew Leeds, who plays Zoe's brother. And we'll have the owner of Circle City Broadcasting, Juwan McCoy, who's now working on the first multicultural news network, which will launch this fall. That's coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Noon Time, right here on DeMarvey Televised. A week from Monday, we'll have former Lifetime official Gary Morgenstern, who's doing his first television series, and he's going to release it in a very unusual way. He'll talk about that, and the director of that program, called Joyland, will also be with us. That's all coming up a week from Monday. to start off March 1st to be exact, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. If you came in late on today's episode, or you want to catch up an episode you missed, go to our homepage. It's available right now. SimonApple04 it's blogtalkradio.com/televised. blogtalkradio.com/televised. Again, it's blogtalkradio.com/televised. Don't forget, in a few minutes, our program becomes a podcast on Amazon Music, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, our newest podcast, Clean Verbal, Speaker Podcast, TuneIn.com, and other places as well, plus iTunes and Apple TV. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think about our program today? What's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going, including interactive TV? Let me know. Just drop me a line. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. And don't forget, that's how you get involved in our classic trivia question of the week. One more time, here's our question, and it's the last time we're showcasing it on the air. Who played John Adams on the 1976 PBS award-winning miniseries, The Adams Chronicles? If you know the answer, email me at SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Again, if we don't get an answer by the end today, we'll post the question on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook is Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWT. And again, both of those places where you can also check in with me and let me know what you think about our show and about the world of television in general. And I do respond however you communicate in 24 hours because what you say matters, okay? So be in communication. We love hearing from you, and we do respond. And one thing we also do, we also respect you, our audience. Whatever you thought of Russ Limbaugh, Russ had a philosophy. Always respect your audience. Never disrespect your audience. Whatever you thought of Russ Limbaugh, that's why he lasted 30 years in the medium of radio, doing 5 days a week, 3 hours a day, no matter what, until the very end. By the way, his wife, Caitlin, did a marvelous, I think, job, a really incredible eulogy to Rush on what was the last program on Wednesday. It was really incredible, and you ought to hear it no matter what. You should. That woman has tremendous courage and very, very special. So once again, let me hear from you, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter with your TV thoughts. I do respond in 24 hours because, as always, what you say matters. And I want you to know we respect you no matter what. Okay? Okay. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not to say those of Blog Talk Radio and other services program. Our production associate is Mandolin. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonnenberg, head of content. The co-founders of this enterprise are Alan Levy and Bob Cherish. Tomorrow Be Televised was brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic weekend, no matter where you are. Our thoughts are with everybody in Texas. Hang in there. The power is coming back on, we understand. And hopefully this cold spell is getting out the door this weekend. So hang in there. We're listening for you. And our thoughts and prayers are with all of you down there in the Lone Star State. We'll be back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, Verbal, and the iRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to with you now and then, please make it safe and make it great. And now more than ever, let's lick this pandemic. We will lick it, absolutely. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.